Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 41 for November 23rd, 2007. Rekindled. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, ladies and gentlemen, my friends, my neighbors, those of you dyed in Redmond Green. Come out of the woods because Paul Thurrott is here. He is your leader, your Windows leader. And Red Leader 2. I don't know.
It's not a cult.
It's not a cult. In fact, I think that's one reason people use Windows, because they just don't want to be part of that cult Mac cult thing.
Sure.
Paul is the news editor for Windows IT Pro. He's the author of a great book called Windows Vista Secrets, a must-have book from Wiley & Sons. He is also, of course, the guy behind the supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com, and his own blog, internet-nexus.com. Well, now that I've got all the plugs in there, hey, Paul.
Hey.
Have you had any time to do anything but play games this week?
Yeah, I've been very busy.
We're going to talk about games. I just got a new Xbox. The Xbox 360 games this month have been fantastic.
I'm going into, like a game-induced coma here.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about
it. It's getting to the point where I'm going to have to stay up all night a couple of nights this week or something. Right?
Oh, man, I want to. You know, my son stole Assassin's Creed and started playing it. It's such a good game that it's the first game I've ever seen where you can actually watch somebody play. Well, Guitar Hero's like that too. But you can watch somebody play and actually be entertained. I mean, it's so beautiful. It's so richly detailed. And anyway, we'll get to that in a second. We talked last week about the Squirkle and the Zune. I got a great letter.
I did too.
Did you get?
Yeah. I got a couple about that. The Squirkle is in fact a known entity.
What do you mean? Such a thing?
Have you heard this?
No.
Oh, now I'm gonna have to look this up. So the Squirkle was apparently invented by Ford Motor Company way back in the 1930s, if I remember correctly.
Well, you can't invent a square with rounded.
Well,
corners.
sure. You
sorry,
can.
I think that's.
Well, I'm sorry. The term Squirkle was first applied, and apparently is a design element that they use in their vehicles.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's what I hear.
Yeah, but I agree with you. It does look a little odd.
It's a little off.
Well, after you said that, I went home and I looked at my Zune.
I'm sorry, I ruined it for you.
No, but yes. It doesn't look like a geometric shape. It looks like it's not balanced. It's something weird. But I got a great letter from April, who's 11 years old. She's in seventh grade. And she's so mad at me. She says, how can you judge something because of the shape?
And then you said, because I'm a Mac user.
Yeah, that's what she said. That's exactly what she said. She said, sure, the Zune has its ups and downs, but hello, the Squirkle comment was so stupid. How do you like your viewers now, Mr. It's a Chinese knockoff of an iPod?
Yikes.
Just so you know, there's a kid at my school who used to get his comments from t-shirts, and now he gets them from you. And I thought getting comments from t-shirts was bad enough. Well, at least t-shirts don't waste time commenting on a shape. I mean, this 11-year-old, she went off on me. I mean, how many people do you see walking down the street with a t-shirt that says Squirkles are shapes, but they just look off to me? So I hope you realize now how stupid your comment on the Squirkle was and how misleading you are to t-shirt boy. Your Squirkle lover, April from Largo, Florida. April, I apologize. I like my Zune. I've been using my Zune.
You know what you're going to have to do is send her a t-shirt that has the mathematical equation.
Or maybe just says Ford invented it first.
Well, right. So apparently, if you look up Squirkle on Wikipedia, there is in fact a
yes, it's a mathematical shape with properties between those of a square and those of a circle. It is a special case of a super ellipse. Oh yeah, there is a formula. Look at that.
So the Squirkle debuted on a 32 Ford.
Wow.
But
it does look off to me. I'm looking at a Squirkle right now. You know, it's kind of like the shape of a television bezel. The old school television bezels.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, anyway, there you go.
Well, that concludes another episode of the Zoom.
No, we wanted to talk a little bit more about the Zune software, because we emphasized the fact that it was for buying music for the Zune, but in fact, it's also how you manage your music now. Does it replace Windows Media Player?
No, you know, unfortunately, that's the problem in some ways with the Zune software, is that it's not full-featured enough to actually replace everything else you're using. You know, right. So you can't play DVDs with it. It doesn't actually go completely full screen. It doesn't have a lot in there for, you know, for example, in iTunes, if you want, you can have it manage your library and actually, you know, manage the folder structure and all that. And there's nothing like that in Zune. And I think that they did that on purpose, right? They went for the really simplified approach. But I think it's going to take a little while for it to become, you know, completely full featured. So it's more of a, it's almost like an augmentation of what you might already be using, and then you'll use it specifically to interface with both the service that they have and then also the device.
Hey, parenthetically, it sounds like a wire is hitting the mic, or there's some rattling.
Oh, that could be. That's because I'm lounging.
Lying on your back?
Someone's dropping grapes into my mouth.
Oh man, what a laugh at the Therot compound.
Well, you know, this is an off night for us, so.
off it is. We don't normally do this. It's like
different situation.
It's 7 after 7 in the evening at the Zune compound, at Therot compound.
The Zune compound, right?
At number 3 Squirkle Place. I think we stand by our comments that the marketplace is much improved. I like it. It's usable.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And actually, I have to say, just from a pure, you know, media consumption standpoint, you know, the PC software where you can go and look at your music and organize it into playlists and just sort of play it and enjoy it, is it's a great application. I really like it. I mean, starting over from scratch may have seemed somewhat dubious of an idea, but clearly was the right thing to do. So
there is something they did that still drives me crazy. That's stupid. And maybe I'm getting more used to it because I use an Xbox, but the money thing, the way they do their money.
And you know something, I had written about that, and then it occurred to me later that they could solve that problem right now.
How?
And see, obviously the reason they're using this point system is that it's financially advantageous for them to do so, right? They get charged, you know, per transaction fees from the credit card companies. So, you know, by having you pay them in lump sums and then, you know, cherry pick the content you want later. I mean, A, you're giving them a short term loan, but you're all, you know, you're causing them to have fewer transaction fees, right?
Apple tries to do that. Apple lumps, as you buy stuff, it'll kind of try to lump them together. But if you only buy one song and don't buy anything for another 3 days.
But but it's more consumer friendly, isn't it? I mean,
it is.
You can buy one song, so maybe they get charged.
Well, you know what your songs are costing. I don't know what a Zune point's worth, really. It's, you know, it's some fraction. And
this is all they have to do. So they have if you go to I'm looking at an album on their site now, it says buy 790, and then there's a little character that looks like a euro sign, but I assume that's the Microsoft point symbol.
Right.
All it has to do is say /.
Oh, yeah.
$7.90 or whatever it is.
I wish they would do that.
Why can't they just do that?
Yeah.
In other words, keep the point system. I get it. I have to give you lump sums. Okay, fine.
Yeah, that's, let me buy 50 bucks at a time then.
It's fine, you know, but just let me know what I'm spending. You know, 79, what looks like euro cents per song or whatever it is, doesn't mean anything to me. It's 79 Microsoft points. That's ridiculous.
Right. It gets lumped in. Because I also am using it to buy stuff on Xbox Live, and it just kind of gets a mess.
Yeah, yeah.
I had forgotten to mention that last week. That still bugs me. I mean, I guess I've gotten inured to it somewhat, but it still bugs me.
I mean, you could sit here and pick it apart. I mean, there's a list of things that I don't like about it. I mean,
we're not saying it's perfect.
It's not perfect. You know, they actually use media player style keyboard shortcuts, which I always think are the wrong thing to do. So, for example, if you're in iTunes and you want to pause the song that's playing, you hit the space bar. And if you want to restart the song, you hit the space bar.
Right.
That doesn't work in the Zune software. It doesn't work in Windows Media Player. You have to hit Control P.
See, that's dumb. Because every music program in the world, space bar is...
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Drives me crazy. I hate that stuff. And it's a little thing. I know, it's not a reason to, to pan it, but...
We still like the Zune, April. Please, no t-shirts.
No t-shirts.
Don't send me no t-shirts.
There you go.
All right. So let's get on to the Kindle, because I can't believe it, but I think you ordered one. Yeah, you ordered one, Steve Gibson ordered one. I think Scott Bourne ordered. I think a number, but you can't wait.
You don't understand how hard it was. Maybe you do. Because you own one.
I own the Sony 505.
I didn't buy one. And I have to tell you, I would go into a Borders and I would see that thing sitting there. And it killed me not to buy it.
You know, it's funny that you should say that, because I have reached for it four or five times. It took me 5 months to buy it. And it was it's one of those things where it's, you know, it's not quite where it ought to be. I love to read. And I love the idea of carrying dozens of books with me in a little lightweight device.
It's the dream.
But you also look at the page, the screen, the e-ink, and it's not as contrasty as it ought to be.
The thing with the Sony that killed me was I don't like Sony's store.
Right. Although it's better in this, the second version is better.
So they make lousy software in general.
They always do. Absolutely.
Sony Connect, couldn't deal with it.
Yep.
The quality of the screen, it's okay. I don't like that weird refresh effect you get when you change pages.
Right.
But, you know, that's the Kindle has the same issue because it's the same screen.
Yeah, I think they got the same. Yeah.
It's that e-ink, patented technology.
There's only one. Yeah.
Yeah.
What made you buy the Kindle? What put you over the top of the Kindle?
It's Amazon, right? They are going to get this right. There's no doubt about it. And
I don't know, Paul. It doesn't look very right to me. I don't have one yet.
Okay. Well, yeah, I've seen.
It's got a QWERTY keyboard on it. Why does it have a QWERTY keyboard on it?
Right. Well, I think the thing that they got right with this first version is the wireless EVDO-based access that's free to the store, so you can buy things.
Yep.
The price of individual books, I think, is right.
Are they cheaper?
$9.99 for New York Times bestsellers.
See, that's a lot less than the Sony.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, audiobooks and ebooks historically have always been a little more expensive than I thought they should be.
Exactly.
And this is an example of, it's the right company doing it in the sense because they can get that price, so we'll see. You know, I
don't like it that you can only buy Mobi formatted documents. I mean, it has to be formatted in their special mobile.
Oh, and by the way, listen, there's all kinds of things wrong with it. You can pay for podcasts. I'm sorry. You can pay for RSS feeds, but you can't get RSS feeds that are free. So if you wanted to subscribe to, say, my RSS feed or yours, you can't because we're not going through the Amazon system and you'd have to charge people for that.
We're not big stars. But you know who is? Robert Scoble. So Scoble's going to get, he's so excited.
He should pay me to listen to him. why would I want to pay to listen to Robert?
Well, this will be interesting. He thinks he's going to make money on it. It's $2 a month.
I hope he gets his little 2 cent per month VIG or whatever
is. Well, he's going to get a lot. They say, I think 30%, he says. But now, see, here's why this is smart. All the A-list bloggers who are going to get this 30% are going to be suddenly fond of the Kindle.
Sure.
And you look it was on the front page of front cover of Newsweek, 7 pages worth of glowing reviews.
7 unnecessarily long words.
Ridiculous. Pages of, absurd. Yeah. I don't understand the
interest.
This thing's going to be a flop like the Sony Reader is.
That could be. So I think it's kind of a geek thing. I think, you know, when the dust clears, what we might discover is that the market for this thing is unfortunately pretty small. I appreciate that Jeff Bezos, you know, the founder and CEO of Amazon is such a huge book fan that he wanted to do this, and they've worked on it for 3 years. And,
My sense of it is though, Paul, that this is something designed around Amazon's business model and not around anything a customer actually wants.
Well, okay. But let me add.
Well, you want it, so I might be wrong. Yeah.
Well, yeah, no, like I said, part of the attraction is that it is Amazon, and we've talked before about a lot of this cloud-based service stuff, and I've often said, you know, where I can pay for premium services, I often do, and there are some areas, like say with Gmail, where it's often not possible or easy to pay for the premium version, where, you know, I would if it was available. And Amazon is one of those places where, even though they often don't have the best price, they're so convenient and their customer service is so excellent that I end up getting so much stuff for them. So, for example, I join the program. I forget, it's called Amazon Prime or
Amazon Premium. Prime. I am an Amazon Prime member.
So you pay $80 a year and you get second day shipping on everything, or you can pay $3 and get next day shipping.
Right.
You know,
I love that. And I do that all the time.
Right. Oh, yeah. So I'm just kind of an Amazon guy, you know, as it is. So if I was going to shop around, I was, you know, maybe I'm going to go buy a book or a CD or a movie or something.
You're sounding like you're about Amazon and some people are around Mac.
Well, no, I'm not trying to convince you that it's the way to go. I'm just saying for a certain segment of the population, myself included, it's great. And by the way, not to get off on an Amazon kick, but, you know, their MP3 service is decent.
It's the best.
Their Unbox service for movies is fantastic.
See, I don't use that because it's Windows only, and I just don't.
See, that's not a problem for most of us, Leo.
All right, rub it in.
I don't want to say I'm a fan, but, you know, when I look at, you know, places that I'm going to spend money online, Amazon, I just think they've got a good thing going. So
I feel like go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just got to say, these are the guys who are going to get it right.
I feel like I'm really contrarian on this. First of all, I mean, I don't know. I can't understand all the excitement about this. Amazon has never made a hardware product.
I don't think they've ever made a product.
So when you say they're going to get it right,
So I don't have this device yet, but what I do have is the leather binder case, you know, that they make for it to protect it.
Yeah.
And it's got that kind of oily leather, high quality. Oh man, I'm just touching it. It's awesome. No, but it's also, it's much smaller than it looks in pictures.
Right.
It's about the size of a DVD case.
Right.
You know,
well, that's how big it should be. Part of the appeal of this is that it has to be something as small as, or maybe even smaller than a paperback, or what's the point?
Right. And it is, I'd say it's thinner than a typical paperback. It's a little taller and wider than a typical paperback, but it's right in there. It's not the size of a hardcover, a typical hardcover at all. It's much smaller than that. And smaller, frankly, than I thought it was going to be.
See, the Sony Reader has been a miserable failure. They've only sold a few thousand. Yeah. Or I can't remember what the number was, but Scott Bourne was telling us on MacBreak Weekly. It was a ridiculous number.
Sure.
I agree with you. The idea of wireless is great. It sounds like Amazon's going to make a lot of money on this. They're charging $400 for it, which is $100 more than the Sony Reader.
And it's easily $100 more than it should be.
I'd buy, you know what? If it were $250, I would buy it. Yeah. I'm not going to pay $400 for that.
I had to do it.
Well, good. Better you than me.
I had to do it.
The other thing that's intriguing, next week we'll get your review.
Well, assuming I have it by then, but
2 weeks.
I should ask you on the Sony, can you subscribe to newspapers on that?
You cannot. It doesn't have that feature. It doesn't have
So that's something I'm trying. So I subscribe to Time. I think it's $1.25 a month. Time magazine. I subscribe to the New York Post because it was the cheapest of the newspapers. We already get the paper version of the New York Times at home, and we also get the New York Times Reader with that, which is the PC application, which is absolutely fantastic.
Isn't that beautiful? Yeah.
And it's unclear to me why I would have to pay again for this on the, you know, on the Amazon device, although I'm going to have to look into that. If you want to, you know, for example, you can get international newspapers like the Irish Times or Le Monde.
And they're delivered automatically, right?
Yeah, they come down that night. So
if you're going to sit there at breakfast, that's pretty attractive.
I like that a lot. It's really interesting. So,
all right. Well, I bought a Sony ebook reader. I bought two of them. I lost the first one. I bought the second generation. So I'm not against the notion of this stuff. And I'm very well aware of the limitations of these e-screens, these e-ink screens. So I could very well be, you know, buying this thing in, a few months. But just right now, I don't know.
I know.
I'm not.
I think the only reason I jumped on this so quickly was because I didn't get the Sony, and I've always had this kind of nagging.
Well, if I didn't have the Sony, I'd be buying this. You're exactly right.
Yeah.
How much is the Journal?
The Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, because I pay for an online subscription to the Journal.
It's somewhere between $9.99 and $15.99. I think it's right in the middle.
About $12.99. Yeah, I think it's $175 a year for the. Online
version. I pay for the online version of that as well.
Yeah, and I that's worthwhile for me. And frankly, I don't like all that paper on my doorstep. I end up recycling it a lot. I don't get to read it, and I feel guilty.
Oh, you should see my recycle bins every week. It's insane. Yeah.
I get the New Yorker. I get a lot of magazines that I probably would prefer to get them on this Kindle.
Oh, this has been the dream forever.
Wall Street Journal is $10 a month. That's not bad. Times is $13.99. Post is not.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I got the Post. Yeah, I think I got the Post because I already get Wall Street Journal. Right, I already get New York Times. So it seemed like the one, you know, try that. So I don't know. so we'll see.
You're just mad because Supersite for Windows isn't one of the 20 blogs or whatever.
Listen, I wanted to be on there for free. I couldn't care less about making money.
You know, it bugs me that they're charging. I guess they give the money back, but
whatever. You know what? If I don't understand why you can't subscribe to any RSS feed. So,
right.
I think that's something they're going to have to fix. I think this model of charging for something that's free elsewhere is broken, and that this should just be free.
Right.
You know.
Well, so they got to give Sprint some money, I imagine.
You know, I don't think charging people for that's the right idea. So.
Right.
That has nothing to do with it. I couldn't care less about getting paid for that. Good. That's stupid.
Well, we're going to review. Next week, we're actually going to interview the Windows Live guys. So we'll get your review on the Kindle in 2 weeks, which will be good.
Hopefully.
And there's another review I want from you, and you may not have it by then. I bought the Asus ePC. You bought an OLPC, both the same price, very similar form factors, very lightweight, small PCs. One, of course, is saving the world. The other one is just making a Chinese country.
One is apparently a Fisher-Price product, and the other one is
Linux. Yours is bright green. Mine runs Linux. They both run Linux.
It reminds me of is that Apple eMate product, right?
It does look like
which eMate. Which was something I always actually used to, I don't want to say lust after, but I used to, you know, as someone who travels a lot and you always want to go with something small, I used to look at the eMate and think, man, this is
the right size. Be glad you didn't get one. They weren't so good. I had one.
Yeah. But the form factor was right there.
Right. And obviously, this is why I like the Asus. The Asus is 2 pounds.
Yeah. I think the keyboard's going to prove to be too small.
Doesn't bug me on the keyboard. I thought it would. Patrick Norton hated it. I like it, and I've gotten used to it. It only takes a few days to get used to it. It's got one of those small shift keys, which is very annoying for reasons no one understands. The number keys are shifted over to the left one. So, at first you get a little confused, but I didn't find it too difficult. Probably not good for a touch typer, but for a two-finger typist like me, I'm a fast two-finger typist. But
what's the storage like on that thing? 4 gigabytes?
4 gigs, or? And you have, the bulk of that is available. That's plenty. I mean, it's not really... It's good enough for, writing your book. You wouldn't start putting a lot of movies on it.
I know it's Linux, but is it like a brand Linux? Or
it's Zandros sort of Linux, which is based on Debian. You can hack it. It's very hackable. In fact, you get right to the terminal if you want, but you press Control-Alt-T and you've got the terminal. You can run. It's got Python on it, so you can write your own software for it. It compiles other Python software. You can add other software. In fact, one of the first things I did is upgrade to Skype 2.0, which has video. The thing has a video camera.
This thing was what, $400?
$399. Same as the OLPC. Of course, you get two for $399, but one goes to an.
Well, I don't two, but yeah, I give them
one goes to a child.
I mean, I imagine I'd be giving both of these away eventually. I'm pretty much going to review it. I can't imagine that I'm going to. Want to hold on to it. Although I have to tell you, I get a sort of an evil smile on my face every time I think about going to a meeting with Microsoft to pull it with out of my bag,
Little green.
Excuse me, let me get out my little plastic computer here.
The little green ears. You guys have mesh because I'm a mesh kind of guy. Well, it's interesting because it's running Squeak. It's running Smalltalk. And you can actually download the operating system. And you can download the whole system.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah, as an image on Squeak. So if you want to try it on a PC or a Mac, you can download it and see what the... operating system looks like.
Well, maybe we'll do that.
They're donating, Maxis is donating the old Sims to it, so there'll be SimCity on it, which is kind of neat.
Very good.
I think it's going to be intriguing. You won't get it till next month, so.
Yeah, it's going to be December sometime.
Yeah. I have to say, on the balance, the Asus E is really neat. The screen is too small. It's only 800 by 400, which means it's not wide enough for most websites.
That's like an ultra mobile PC screen.
Bugs me. It should be, it's got to be 1024. I don't care about the height, but you've got to be as wide. You've got to be 1024.
Yeah,
wide.
Yeah.
They're making, apparently the next one will be 8 gigs with a 10-inch screen, and that might do it.
Yeah, that's interesting. Same case or different?
I think it's the same size case. There are big ears for the speakers on this one. I have to say, though, good speakers, good microphone, good camera. It's really a good Skype machine. It's an excellent Skype machine, especially if you upgrade to 2.0 and you use Skype with audio. There's a lot to like about this. It's got Firefox. It's got Thunderbird.
Open Office and all that.
Yeah. The Office is a little slow, but it's overall fairly fast. I think it's a 900 megahertz Celeron, 512 megs of RAM, which is plenty for the Linux.
I don't even know why I consider stuff like this, but I'm always interested in these the little
me too
full functional, you know, portable machines. I unfortunately, I'm humongous. My hands are like gorilla hands, and I'd love to be able to have some tiny computer and travel as light as possible.
Exactly.
And I always look for stuff like this, exactly. But I always know it's never going to work.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Steve Gibson had a, might have been a Fujitsu, really tiny little, you know, device. Yep. And what was the name of the, there was a, another Japanese.
The Libretto.
The Libretto, the Toshiba Libretto.
Toshiba, yep. That was, that was a big dream of mine.
They were teensy.
They used to make those Windows Mobile devices like that, too. Right. Remember the the wide, I forget they called them now, but.
The EPC is very close. It's much more usable. Much more usable. It's got a touchpad, trackpad, you know. The buttons are a little weird.
And plus the price is right. You know, so an ultra mobile PC is going to cost $1,000 or $1,200 or whatever.
Right.
You could buy three of those things or four.
Now, unfortunately, the dog ate my charger.
Yes. Jeez.
So I can't charge it. I got, you know, it's really killing me. I mean, I've only had this thing like 5 days. I know. The dag nabbit dog chewed right through the wire. Wow. So either I'm going to have to get out my electrician's tape and fix it. I think that's probably what I'm going to do because I don't see anywhere selling these as a standalone accessory. Yeah.
You're still going to want to get another one.
Yeah.
You know, the do-it-yourself electrical jobs are never a good idea.
Yeah, I have to wait and see. If I can find one, I probably buy it. But I just can't find one, and it's driving me crazy. They've got this thing.
Oh, you
got
to be able to order these online. Go to like not Licksang, they're gone, but
A power supply company?
Well, I was thinking of those Japanese electronics.
Yeah, like a third party one, as long as the voltage is right and the tip and ring is right and the amperage is right. But it's a weird one. It's some weird.
Just bring it to Radio Shack. You'll be all set.
Actually, it looks exactly like the one that comes with a Kindle. I might come over and borrow your Kindle. You I'm not kidding. It's exactly like the Kindle one. Huh. I don't know why. So it so you bought an OLPC. That's nice because you helped out an underprivileged kid in a developing nation.
Yep.
Where they could have their own Mickey Mouse PC.
That's right. There'll be no Windows for you, at least not this year.
Firefox 3 is out. Have you played with it yet?
Yeah, I like it. It's it's kind of streamlined. I don't know if we mentioned this on the podcast. I've been blogging about the work that Mozilla is doing on the UI so that, you know, on Windows Vista, it's going to look like an awesome Vista app. And on, you know, OS X, it's going to look like an awesome OS X app. And in the first beta version of Firefox 3, you don't actually get that on Vista, although you can download the appropriate skin on the Mac side. So that was a little disappointing because I've been dying to see it, you know, up and running. But, you know, some of the other stuff that's there is interesting. And, I like where they're going with this. And this is good timing for me because I've been getting a little freaked by, you know, the memory leak stuff that goes on in Firefox 2. And
they deny it, but boy, it happens.
Well, I don't want to say an excuse. They have a fairly logical reason why it happens. But, you know.
Why?
Because they're pre-caching, apparently. So I guess they examine a page and they can figure out where you might be going next and they start preloading things. So the performance is better, but the net effect is if you leave the thing up and running, especially if you have something like, you know, your Gmail inbox open, right? It's probably pre-fetching every single one of those links. So it just, I wake up in the morning, the thing's taking up a gigabyte of RAM. Yeah. And it's ridiculous. Yeah. So I haven't been using the first beta of version 3 long enough to say that, you know, that they fixed it, but I know that's one of the things they're working on. But, you know, they have a nice, the download manager is nicer. There's kind of a cool zoom effect now, and that's nice. It's getting there. You know, it's kind of a, I don't know, it's nice. But it's just,
I think the idea, it's funny how the idea of native appeals so much, but it really does. You want the interface to look like Vista.
Well, when Vista came out and with Firefox 2, I mean, there's kind of a sickly light blue, you know, thing going on that you don't see in Windows XP. I mean, on Windows XP, Firefox looks fine, but for some reason on Vista, it just looks, it looks like puke or something. It's awful. I mean, I know that's a little thing, you know, we're talking about a little bit of background color, but, you know, it's one thing to change the background color, but I mean, they're literally changing the UI so that this thing looks and acts and feels like a native, you know, Vista app, something like Photo Gallery or Windows Calendar. It's going to have that, you know, deep black, you know, really nice UI. And, you know, I know it's a little thing, but I'm really looking forward to it. So we'll see what happens.
Cool. Firefox 3. I've had such bad luck with two, not just the memory leak, but just the reliability that I'm kind of thinking I'm going to go backwards, not forwards. Before we get to, I want to talk about gaming because I'm really hot about a new game. I know you are too. But before we do, let's do our Audible pick of the day. Audible, okay. Of course, sponsors this podcast and all the Twit podcasts, and for good reason. We all love Audible. Like, you know, it's so funny. I didn't know this. I mean, I've been an Audible fan for 8 of their 10 years, and I got hundreds of books in my library now. But as soon as I brought up that we were going to have Audible, half the Twit people, including you, everybody is a big Audible fan. I didn't even know it. Secret audiobook readers, I guess. So you have an Audible pick for us. Before you get to that, I want to mention that you can get this book free. You get a credit to a free book by just going to audible.com/windows and signing up, and you'll get a credit for a free book. And we've mentioned a lot over the last 6 months that Audible's been with us, but we've got a new one for you. Is this something you're reading right now, Paul?
Yes, it is. In fact, I was listening to this when you buzzed me for this today.
Oh, cool.
Actually, I got kind of immersed in it. You know,
that's what's neat about audiobooks. You really do get sucked into it.
Well, it's a problem in some ways because it caused a temporary work haltage here today.
That's good when a book is that good. But, you know, I don't know. I'm getting older. I can't read for as long. I get sleepy. But audiobooks, I can go for hours, and I really do get immersed in them in a way you don't with a written book. So what's this one?
Yeah. Well, this one is sort of a new version of the type of book I used to read a lot of. You know, back, I would say 10 years ago, for whatever reason, there were a bunch of books coming out about, you know, the history of Apple computer, the history of Microsoft, you know, whatever. Right around the beginning of Microsoft's antitrust troubles, there was a lot of stuff at that point. And this one is actually about Google. And I know that there are a number of Google books out. I don't actually have a lot of experience with any of them except for this one, but I found this one to be quite good. It's called The Google Story, and then the subheading is Inside the Hottest Business, Media, and Technology Success of Our Time. It's by David A. Weiss and Mark Malseed.
Is it pretty up to date?
Yeah, I believe it was made in the last couple of years, but I think I'm not so much concerned with, you know, totally up to the minute. You know, I don't expect it to be about the Google phone. Some ways, you know, as it stands now, when you think about Google and what they've become and where they're going, I think it's important now to look back and understand how this even happened. Mm. I mean, you know, Google, for a time there was, you know, killing companies that had a lot more money than they do. And now, of course, Google has
more money than God.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a slightly different situation. But I think that the it's interesting to compare this to companies like Apple and Microsoft, because obviously they all have a certain vibe, you know, and to the way they do things. And Google certainly has their own way of doing things. And it's interesting that they're the sort of the current hot, you know, technology trend. I think this is the right time to start looking back. And how did this happen? You know, where did they come from?
Yeah. So this is the story of Larry Page and Sergey Brin as graduate students at Stanford coming up with this concept and creating.
Yeah. And all the quirky things they kind of do. And it's funny because a company like Google, obviously, when they have no money, when they're just starting out, you can kind of look at the quirky stuff they do, like building their own computers.
Right.
And you can say, well, you know, they do this out of necessity.
Right.
But now that they're worth, you know, $19 quadrillion, whatever it is,
still do it.
Why are they still doing this? Right. So, you know, it's part of their, you know, culture. It's just part of the culture. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's an interesting book.
That sounds great. I'm going to have to read that. I too love these computer history books, because I feel like we're in the middle of a historic era, and you do want to see this happen, you know.
Well, that was always actually my thing. So I remember when I was sort of up and coming and trying to get into the computer industry decades ago, I would read these stories about Apple computer in the early 80s, especially the late 80s, or Microsoft's early years, and how, you know, Windows kind of came to dominate. And I always used to think, man, you know, I wasn't there for this stuff. I mean, I would have given anything to have been part of that.
Right.
But the reality is it's happening now again.
Oh, we're part of it. We are part of it.
To be part of it. Yeah. Yeah. So,
well, no, it is neat.
You know, I don't look at Google, but I mean, it's nice to be witnessing it as it happens and hopefully, you know, having a perspective on that.
Well, you know, I'm older than you, and I'm a contemporary of Bill Gates and Steve Jobs. And so, and I, you know, was hanging out in Silicon Valley when all that stuff was happening. So it's even worse for me. It's like, man, if I'd only realized, I could have given that guy some money when he asked for some, you know? And
the part of this Google story was there was a point where they were, just to survive, they were going to sell all of their search technology for $1 million.
Oh.
Nobody wanted it.
Thank God.
And how funny is that?
Thank God. So. Can you imagine?
No. And that, and you know what? And that's what makes it interesting. As much as I, in some ways make fun of Google because, you know, they're basically an advertising company when you think about it from, a revenue perspective.
Right.
How could you even imagine what the internet would be like today without these guys? Right. I mean, it's
impossible. And they have a unique culture that I think makes them more than just an advertising company. There's something going on.
Oh, no, of course. And that's what I meant. I mean, in other words, I joke about that because, you know, when it comes down to it, that's where they make the money. But
exactly.
Of course, there's so much going into it.
And I think you have a really good point. It's important to remember that that's what their business is. It's not, they're not in the search business and the advertising business.
Right. And it's the same way you might look at Microsoft and you say, okay, well, let's pretend that they don't make Windows and Office. Now, how do they make money? Oh, they don't.
Right.
You know,
there it is.
As it turns out, they're hemorrhaging money. Yeah. So it's interesting to do that kind of, analysis. Yeah. Whatever.
Great. I can't wait to read it. That's the Google story inside the hottest business, media and technology success of our time. It is by David A. Weiss, V-I-S-E, and it is free if you go to audible.com/windows, audible.com, audible.com/windows. We thank Audible so much for their support of Windows Weekly. We wouldn't be here without our great sponsors and, of course, our great donors. We thank you, too, for your support. You keep us floating along in between ads. So now, the moment I've been waiting for, games.
Oh, I was wondering what that was going to be. So, yes.
You know, it was such a crappy year. In fact, it's been a crappy, 3 years for games. And all of a sudden, the last two months, boom!
But you got to remember, 2 years ago, the Xbox 360 came out. And, wow, I mean, there wasn't really a lot, that came with it that was really that interesting. And then last year, the Wii and the PS3 came out. And neither one of those had, and by the way, neither one of them still has anything particularly interesting. And, but on the Xbox 360 side, also on the Windows side, this is like the bonanza. I mean, it's like two really dry years, and then suddenly this year is just, it's amazing.
It started with BioShock, which was really
great. Yeah, I would say so. Yep.
Then Halo 3.
Yep.
Those, it turns out, were just prelude to the better games.
That should have been enough, right?
Yeah.
If anything, to a lot of people, they'll just keep playing Halo 3. Nothing else ever happened. But, you've got games like The Orange Box, which is arguably the greatest game of all time.
Yep.
Call of Duty 4, which is my personal favorite.
That's what you're playing right now.
Oh, yeah. I can't stop playing this thing.
What makes Call of Duty 4 so good?
I'm not sure I can explain it very well. The Call of Duty games have always been a favorite, but of course the first three were all about World War II. This one is about modern warfare, and it's a fictional event that involves the Middle East and terrorists and also the former Soviet Union and renegade nuclear weapons and so forth.
But it's really not about the story, is it? It's about the weapons.
Well, no, the story is fantastic, but the play is very similar. So if you're used to Call of Duty 2 or the original Call of Duty, you can jump right into it. It's the same kind of thing. The storyline is absolutely fantastic, but really what it's about is just some of the set pieces, which are just, so immersive. There's the one that I called out in my review is still, I've actually gone back and done it three times now. I'm just so impressed by it. There's a level that involves something called a ghillie suit. And this is those, camouflage suits that look like shrubbery or, brush,
Bring me a shrubbery.
Yeah, so you fall to the ground, and then you look like the ground, and people walk right by you, and they don't see you. So there are two ways to go through this level, which is very convoluted, but you can shoot your way through parts of it. You absolutely have to go through some of them in a stealth fashion. You crawl, and people don't see you. But you have this option where you can actually shoot some people, and the enemies basically know that you're there, and it becomes much more difficult as a result. So the first time I played through the game, the guy was the other computer controlled character gave me the option. He said, well, you can take these guys out or you can, we can sneak around. I said, I'll just shoot him. It's a shooter. I'll shoot him. And then it ended up being like the hardest thing I've ever done. Like a helicopter comes after you later in the game. There's a sequence where you're supposed to crawl under a group of trucks with enemies standing all around. And there's no way to do it without being seen. And then there's a pack of wild dogs attacks you at the end. It's really, really difficult. So then I went back and I did it on veteran, which is the hardest difficulty level. I thought, well, this time I'll try to do it as stealthily as possible. And one of the best sequences is you're going through a field and this enemy brigade is walking. There are tanks rolling along and guys that are kind of stretched out across the horizon. And you follow the grass and they actually just walk by you.
Oh.
As you're kind of, you know, squiggling through the grass there. And you have to sort of move very slowly, but also move so that they're not going to step on you, obviously.
Right.
And it's really, it's just so effective and scary and amazing. Yeah, it's awesome. So, and then, of course, there's the online element, too. I mean, like Call of or all the Call of Duty games and also the Halo game or whatever. The online stuff is fantastic. So it's just a great all-around game. I mean, I love it.
You haven't got Assassin's Creed yet, so don't.
No. And I haven't gotten Mass Effect yet, so those are going to wrap. Those should wrap up my year nicely. I've got, you know, Guitar Hero 3 and The Simpsons.
Another great book. Yeah, a great game. I call them books, so my wife won't know I'm playing video games.
This PGR 4 is out, the racing game, and I have a stack of them here. I don't even know what to.
I'll be really interested to hear what you think of Assassin's Creed. It's a stealth game. I have to say, one of the things I really enjoy about it is it's using the graphics engine to on the Xbox 360 beautifully, and I'm sure COD does too. I haven't tried it yet.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
But we're really seeing games just look fantastic now.
You know something, and of course that's part of it too, because here we are 2 years out, and now instead of these straight ports, we're getting games that have clearly been designed to the strengths of the system, and
You just, I mean, you feel like you're there. And as I was saying, my kid's playing and I'm not even playing it. And I'm actually enjoying watching the game. It will bother some people because it's very controller intensive. It's a little like Prince of Persia. You're an assassin during the Crusades, a lot of climbing, a lot of stealth. You have to really, it's very strategic. Right. You have to just as you were saying in this game, you really have to choose your battles and know what to do. And you can get in a heap of trouble if you're not very careful. It's a little bloody. I mean, you're killing people, but you're doing it with blades, not with guns. So you have to come up right up to them. There's quite a bit of sword fight, a lot of kind of puzzly style climbing, as in Prince of Persia, and it really is a controller focused game. If you know, it might be one that kids play better than adults because you got to mash those buttons just right to make it work. But what a gorgeous, gorgeous game. And strategically and I think story-wise, very innovative. And I'm always looking for something that is breaking new ground. And this definitely feels like it's a...
Have you ever seen the movie Kingdom of Heaven?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it got that kind of vibe to it?
Yes,
that kind
of... it's Middle East, right?
Yeah.
So, but it's during the Crusades. So you're fighting.
Yeah. That's Kingdom of Heaven, basically.
Yeah, you're fighting. It's the same story. As Kingdom of Heaven. It's the same time period. In this case, in Kingdom of Heaven, you're a Frenchman. I think you're European, and you're in the Middle East defending Jerusalem.
Right, Jerusalem against
the Crusaders.
Muslim.
In this case, you're an assassin. Yeah. So you're a Muslim defending Jerusalem against the Crusaders. So yeah, the enemies are the Saracens and the French.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really. If you liked Kingdom of Heaven,
I will get it.
Yeah, if you like that era,
I do
very much that feel.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It was really. It's but
yeah, that one in Mass Effect there on my.
The storyline is interesting because it's actually a modern storyline. Well, you'll see. It's fun. Anyway, but a button masher for sure. I'm excited. So now what's Mass Effect about?
It's sort of a, you know, alien invasion sci-fi shooter. Oh, you just reminded me of another game I have to get. Actually, it's called Black. I just forgot what it's called. Area 51 or Black something. I don't know.
You know, it's fun. I go up to Vancouver to do the lab, and that's where they shoot Electric Playground. I mean, they're all into gaming there. And reviews on the run. So they have all the new games. So I get a chance to look at the games before I buy, which is really...
Oh, there you go.
And play them. It's really nice.
Mass Effect is the big deal this week, I guess. And I'll have to go snag that. It was temporarily banned in Singapore because there was some sort of a human alien love scene, I guess.
Oh, a lesbian love scene.
Yes.
Well, if it's not... I don't think any game is any good unless it's been banned in Singapore.
I
actually look for that. I look for that.
Right. I guess it's not that hard, actually.
It's very easy to get banned in Singapore.
In fact, I think we were just banned in Singapore ourselves.
Now, have you played Manhunt 2? Because that's getting a lot of attention right now.
No, and my understanding, though, is that isn't that only on the Wii right now? That's not on the 360 yet, is it?
I don't know.
Yeah. I think what happened was they made a a tuned-down version on the Wii. If I could be wrong about this, but I believe that the version that's out now is not the full, the version that got them in trouble.
That's coming.
And I guess so, yeah. I have to tell you, I mean, that kind of thing doesn't make me want to run out and grab it. I don't know.
It's PlayStation,
I'll think about it, I guess.
PlayStation 2, PSP, and Wii.
Yeah, so it's not on any of the, the
high-def top-tier
graphical systems.
Yeah, I don't know if you can really be bloody, gruesome, and graphic if you're not on a high-def system nowadays.
There you go.
It's cartoon violence.
It's just kind of a smudge.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe that's the point. I think that's why they're out on those systems right now. So, I don't know.
I'm not worried about that.
Yeah.
All right, Mass Effect. Gonna put that in my list. You put Assassin's Creed on your list, and I was gonna get Call of Duty 4 and Assassin's Creed yesterday, and I thought if I buy two games in one night, I really am a nerd.
Yeah.
Let's talk about something we were gonna talk about, ran out of time last week. We're practically out of time this week, and that is HP's Media Smart Server. Is this the first one to use Windows Home Media Server?
It's the first one. Out. It's the first main. I would say from a tier one.
Right.
PC maker. I believe there were some, niche products out previously, but I've seen what's coming out, for Microsoft, and this is the one I've always sort of lusted after, and I was able to review it, and I'm actually going to participate in a web seminar that they're doing next Tuesday, and I love it. I mean, this is something that solves some real problems.
That's neat.
And the HP version is particularly good.
It looks cool.
It looks cool. And actually, that's one of the tough things about it, because you almost want to showcase it, but I'm trying to,
It's for the closet. Keep it in the closet.
Yeah, right. So, I'm trying to minimize the clutter in here. And yet this is one of those things I kind of want to stick it out at the desk, because people always comment on it. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And, it has hot swap, storage capabilities, SATA drives, they can put in there four of them. And
hot swap means you can take them out when it's still running.
Take them out and put them in. Yeah.
Replace them while it's running. Wow.
Yep. No, which by the way is, it works, but I got to tell you, that's a leap of faith right there. Unless you've been working in the server world for a while.
Yeah.
You just don't do that. And plus I'm someone who has blown a hole in the middle of a CPU because I didn't ground myself properly while I was inside my PC like an idiot. This kind of thing just freaks me out. So
I remember working with Bill McCrone, who was editor in chief of, I think it was Bill, but PC Magazine. And he wanted to put a video card in, and he didn't turn the machine off. He just did it as quickly as he could. But I don't think...
that doesn't seem like the best way to do it.
I don't think you're going to outrun...
Does it really take that long to boot up?
I don't think you can outrun the electrons.
No.
He knew halfway through that what he was doing was a big mistake, and he was right.
I don't want to do that.
You said, oh...
No, but this it works, and it does work, we've talked a little bit about Windows Home Server... here in the podcast. Yes, and so it has all that stuff, that makes Windows Home Server really good. But, what HP added that I thought was great was, they made the setup and configuration drop dead simple, because, I would say in the default Windows Home Server, setup, it's not actually clear, the steps you need to take to get to a fully configured system. And so that's something HP looked at, and they really just fixed it. And the way they handled that is just fantastic. But they've also added a couple of extra services. So, they have some photo sharing software in there, so you can share stuff up on the web, which is great. They also have an iTunes server. So if you have iTunes running on your PCs, it will actually collect all of the non-protected music that's on those PCs and push them up to the server. So there's a central location that has not just a backup of all your music, but also just a single place where you can stream it from within the iTunes environment.
If that
happens to be what you use. It's neat. And something you wouldn't expect Microsoft to do, obviously. So. Microsoft put in all the Windows media sharing stuff. So this kind of adds iTunes compatibility, and that's neat. So anyway, it's a cool little box. And I guess if you want to know more, I guess I would say, check out this web seminar. If you go to the super site and you go to my blog, I have a post up there about it with the, the URL, and you can sign up and all that stuff. And I know we'll probably be a couple hundred people in there next Tuesday.
What technology do you use for those seminars? How do you do that?
They're using Live Meeting, which is the Microsoft.
That makes sense. You'd use the Microsoft stuff. Yeah, yeah.
They're using the latest version too. So this is the first time I've been able to use it live, if you will. I've seen them demonstrate it in meetings and so forth. But you know, they've been on the old version of Live Meeting for a while. So the new version supports a lot of cool multimedia stuff. So there's going to be, you know, live. He'll be remote controlling the software remotely, which is cool. Live, and then also running kind of you know, movies and flash demos and things, and it works great over Live Meeting. It's really nice.
Wow, really cool. Cool. So if I go to Supersite for Windows, is that where the link to the
seminars? Click on the blog link in the toolbar, and then it's one of the top posts. I just put a reminder up there today, and
I'll put a link in our show notes too. So it's not sold out yet.
No, I don't know that it could be because it's virtual. So it's
it could be.
It could be. Okay. It could be. Let's make that happen, shall we?
It could be. I don't think you could have like a million people in there.
It's Microsoft. It, you know,
they could have as many as they. I love it. Okay. I'll put a link in the show notes.
This conversation is ludicrous.
We want you all to go. Let's see what can go wrong.
It really is good stuff. And this is, this is sort of a disclaimer too. I should say, you know, I'm not getting paid to do this. I participated for free because I really like and want to evangelize the product. And I think it's great. I think they've done a great thing here. So,
right. All right, we're going to wrap it up pretty soon with your pick of the week and something new we're going to start doing because we ought to be doing it, which is regular Vista tips for you. Let's get one more story though. And I preface this, it is an Apple, kind of an Apple story, but it's, it's running Windows. So it's a Windows story.
We'll blow through it too.
How do you, VMware has been around for a long time. I've used their stuff on Linux, and it's great.
Yeah, and I've used it on Windows.
Yeah.
And it's always been better than the Microsoft stuff. But as far as running virtual machines on a Mac, you'll know that back in the old days, in PowerPC days and before, you know, virtual PC was it. Kinectix was the company, I believe.
Kinectix,
that made virtual PCs.
Yeah.
And then, I met with them years and years ago at a Macworld conference and was really excited about that. Microsoft bought them out. They sold and now give away virtual PC. They have a virtual server, and in the next version of Windows Server, they'll have a integrated, virtualization technology called Hyper-V now, which is an awful name, but whatever. And but they stopped making the Mac product. So a year or two ago, a year and a half ago, let's say, Parallels Workstation came out of nowhere. And was a great virtualization environment for the Mac. So you could run Windows or Linux or whatever.
Right.
And I have to say, I've been using virtualization technology for years. And a year ago, if you'd asked me, I would have told you, Parallels is absolutely the fastest client-side virtual machine technology I've ever used. It was amazing.
It was mind-blowing.
Yeah, it really was. And especially if you're familiar with the way this used to work. I mean, what they did there was really kind of incredible. But what's happened since then is VMware announced that they were going to ship a version of their, the product they've had for almost a decade now, on the Mac called Fusion. And I remember, sort of greeting this news with, wonderment because, Parallels was always so good. I wondered what the heck, why were they doing this?
Right.
And, when I was out in Seattle, last month, my friend convinced me to buy Fusion, and it was so cheap at Fry's Electronics at the time. I thought, well, even if it's horrible, $30, whatever. It's usually about $80, $90, I believe. This thing is utterly fantastic. It's fantastic. The performance is incredible. It's so good, in fact, that I'm going to at least experiment with this. In fact, I was doing this as well. When I was listening to that audiobook when you called, I was also dismantling my Bootcamp partition on my MacBook so that I could just run the virtual environment from within Leopard instead using Fusion. It's impressive. So a couple of things that it does that I think are impressive. One is, and this is not necessarily a Fusion feature, but I find this really cool. You can integrate this into the Spaces feature in Leopard so that you have Windows running in one of the spaces, like a workspace. And then you can have all your Mac stuff in the other space. So you can just hit Control arrow key and move between the two. You're in the Mac and you're doing iLife or whatever, and then you hit Control arrow and you're in Windows and you're running Internet Explorer and whatever you might want to be running in Windows. It's instantaneous. It's quicker than doing Alt Tab to get to a new application. It's amazing. That's cool. You can run it in a special Unity mode, similar to what Parallels does. The two environments are overlapping, and you can actually have the Windows applications in their own Windows on top of the Mac desktop, which is really interesting as well. I find that a little much, but I suspect many people would love that, especially the people that just want to run maybe they need to run Outlook for some reason.
Right.
You can run the Outlook window right on top of the desktop. That's pretty cool. And and I've lost that last feature. What else was I going to tell you that it does? It's so cool.
It does support
drag and drop. You can drag and drop, copy, paste, all that stuff.
So does Parallels. I think Parallels.
So does Parallels. Okay. Yeah. I know what it is. I'm sorry. I forgot the last big feature. If you do use Bootcamp, Bootcamp, of course, is the Mac feature that allows you to dual boot between Mac OS X and Windows. So when you boot into Windows in such a system, it's Windows running on the laptop. It's just like it would be on any other laptop or desktop. It doesn't matter. It's using the full processor, the full speed of the system. It's a native experience. But from within Mac OS X, you can actually use Fusion to access your Bootcamp partition as a virtual machine. So I guess the idea here is that you've already configured all this stuff and set it up. And if you're in the Mac and you only need to do something quickly, you don't have to reboot. You can just go in there, run it, and get back out. You don't have to actually reboot the machine. But if you're going to play a game or do something that requires more processing power, you can reboot the machine just like you always would. Go back to the Windows partition, run Windows normally. And the sheer number of options that this thing gives you on a Mac for running Windows it's just astonishing. It's a really neat application.
The thing that interests me most about VMware is they really seem to have started to understand how to integrate the hardware in. They support multiple processors, which Parallels does not.
Yes.
And they do DirectX 9 now. You can even play some games. They say their next version is going to support Aero, which will be mind-blowing.
Yeah. Right, and that's when the gloves come off when you think about it, because getting Aero in a virtualized environment would be impressive.
Right,
so
right, that's VMware Fusion. I think it is a very. I mean, that's how I'm running Windows now on a Mac. You need a lot of RAM, and that's just the thing to keep in mind. I mean,
yeah. So I have the first generation MacBook, which is about I want to say it's about a year and a half old now. Yeah,
me too.
They're actually on the third version, if I'm not mistaken.
I know, we're
the
way
new
behind.
Versions, I know, it's crazy. Well, I'm waiting to January because, they tend to announce things.
Yes.
The new versions, the ones that they just released a few months ago, support up to 4 gigabytes of RAM. And I'm thinking that 4 gigabytes would be just right.
Yeah, two for each.
I think you can get 4 gigs of RAM for this thing at Crucial for about $200,
Waiting to January too, and I'll be very interested to see what happens. And for someone like you who really has to live in Windows, what a great compromise. Now you basically have both.
Yeah, so it gives you, so it's sort of like all the elegance of the Mac hardware and then the best of both worlds, So I want to go into, I use iPhoto a lot, for example. It's just a neat solution. It's really, really impressive. And,
it unites the worlds.
It's the why can't we all get along application.
Yes, that's right. It's when the Saracens and the Assassins together at last.
Well, it's the kingdom of heaven theory, that if those guys could have just gotten it together, then none of the bad stuff that has happened since would have ever happened.
Would have been all cool now. Dudes. So let's get our software pick of the week. We haven't done one in a while. You got a good one for us?
Yes, I do. Let me find it. It's called IE7 Pro.
Pro?
The URL is literally ie7pro.com. It's an add-on for Internet Explorer 7, as you might suspect by the name. I came across this because, with all the Firefox problems I've been having lately, I have, been looking around, frankly. And Internet Explorer 7 is good, and it addresses a lot of the problems of the past, but it doesn't have some of the things I really like in Firefox, and actually this adds most of them. So, for example, an ad blocker. You get that inline search, which works just like inline search does in Firefox, and it even has crash recovery, so that if the browser crashes for some reason and you relaunch it, it asks you if you want to restore the previous session, which is wonderful. And, those to me, it does more than that, but to me, that's the big stuff, and it's free and it works great. And, it basically, adds those features that, as good as IE7 is, it's just lacking a couple of things that, were present in Firefox, and there they are. So
amazing.
And it's all free. This for the low, low price.
It's free, free, right? Is it free?
It is free.
Wow. That's neat. Yeah, you know, I like IE7. It's much more secure than IE6 was. I don't mind using it on Vista especially. I think it's probably my browser of choice. Again, I miss the Firefox extensions, so I will absolutely try this.
Yeah, and, you know, unfortunately, in my particular situation, I reinstall things so often that what I've come to discover is that, you know, custom tailoring a browser with a bunch of different extensions is time-consuming and ultimately not productive, you know. But installing this one thing that just adds a couple of those things that I really miss, you know, great.
Easy to do, very quick.
Yep.
All right, before, and by the way, your pick last week was, or a couple of weeks ago, was Windows Live Writer, and we are going to get, or Windows Live, I guess, just all the software. Yeah. Next week, we're going to get those guys to join us and talk a little bit about the Windows Live. I think this, to me, for the last couple of years, this has been the most interesting division at Microsoft.
Oh, I've been saying this forever. I mean, yeah. Back when they were called MSN, you know, I held them up as the example that Microsoft should be following. Because they were move quick, release often, get feedback, fix the problem. You know, compared to Windows, where it was like, we'll come out in 2006. Oh, wait, no. I mean, come on,
right,
guys.
Right. And they were really the, you know, they were set up to compete with Google Labs, and they were doing some really cool stuff. So I'm looking forward to meeting these guys. That'll be next week on Windows Weekly.
Yes.
Now, our tip of the week. This is something we're going to do. Paul pointed out last week. We were talking off the air, and he said, you know, I want to get back to doing Vista tips because Vista's out. People are using it and they want to know how to use it better.
Yeah. And God, I have to say, over a year ago when we started doing the podcast, I mean, I think this is one of the first things we discussed was we should do this. And I think the conversation we had was, yeah, we should do this. Let's wait till Vista comes out.
Right.
Oops. And then we just sort of forgot.
So Vista came out.
So I have 53 weeks worth of tips here. I'm going to get through really quick.
Great.
A lot of these are going to be little things. I mean, in keeping with Apple's 300 plus new features theory, I'd like to highlight some of the smaller things.
Good.
But that are niceties, you know. So, for example, the thing I'd like to discuss this week is just some of the ways in which Windows Task Manager has changed, you know, since XP. And then one of the big areas where it still falls short and then what you can do about that. So, for example, you can right-click on the taskbar and bring up Task Manager. You can hit Control-Alt-Delete in Vista. You get that Windows security screen, and you can choose Start Task Manager from there. But it looks a lot like the old version, right? You get application lists, processes lists, services, etc. One of the things that I really, really like about this is when you go into the processes list, and you can, you know, sort that in various ways, alphabetically, usually, whatever. You'll often, you know, if you ever look at this list, you'll see this thing. And there might not be a description, or there might be a description that doesn't really describe what it is. And you think, what is this thing, you know? And you always have that sort of stab of fear moment where you're like, you know, did I get a virus? Is this some weird, you know, program on my system?
Right.
And one of the things that's new in this version is you can actually right-click on any of these processes and choose Open File Location. And you can go see where this application or where this exe resides on your system. In most cases, I'll give you the one exception to that in a moment. But and this can just help. So, for example, there's a weird thing on my system. It's like J2 GDI, you know, whatever. I have no idea what that is, but it turns out it's something associated with EFax, which is a program I did install the other day. And it sometimes, if you're ever in here, you can just look at stuff like that and think, oh God, what is this? You know, what's going on in my system here? And it's just a handy little thing that should have been in there years ago. And it wasn't, you know, and now it was. The other thing you can do that I believe is new is you can go to services that are associated with certain applications. So if you're in the processes list, again, you can highlight, and this doesn't work for all of them because all of them don't have services associated with them, but you can highlight a processes, right-click, choose go to services, and then it will highlight the services in the services list that are associated with that application. So you can kind of see how they're all tied together. The big thing that Microsoft promised to change in Vista that they didn't change is that there are these host processes applications called SVC host.exe.
Yeah.
This is basically a way to host a DLL inside of a shell exe so that it can execute on your system.
Right.
And in previous versions of Windows, as in Vista, these things would pop up in Task Manager, but you have no way to know what they are. And that's unfortunately still the case. So if you really want to know what that stuff is, there are all kinds of applications that you can get to discover those things. But the one that I use is called Process Explorer. And this is from, you know, the guys at, I just forgot the name of the company, SysInternals. Mark Resendevich and so forth. And this is a complicated application, no doubt about it. It's not for beginners. But one of the things that's interesting about it is you can see all these host containers and you can look inside of them. So, for example, on my own system, just looking at the list, I can see things like the desktop window manager is running inside one of those. Some files associated with Media Center are running inside one of those. And it just allows you to look inside of these host containers and find out what's going on there. So,
hallelujah, because that's a big problem, because everything looks like it's service32.dll.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing, and this is a small thing, but you know, there's a performance tab on Windows Task Manager that gives you sort of an overview of some of the resources on your system, like the CPU and the memory. And yeah, it's a nice little chart, but you can click there's a new resource monitor in Vista, and you can click on that button in the Task Manager, and then you get a separate window that has even more graphs. So you can see things like network and memory usage as well as CPU and disk. But you can also expand those things below the charts so you can see exactly what is taking up those resources on your system. So it's just a much nicer view of, you know, what's running on your system, what resources it's taking up, and just gives you a, you know, sort of a better interface for looking at that stuff than, you know, was possible in previous versions.
Yeah, I've used Process Explorer and Auto Runs, both from Mark Resendevich, as a good combination to figure out what the hell's going on.
Yeah, the guy's a genius.
He really is. He's really neat. Yeah,
the biggest head on earth. I mean, he is just the smartest guy.
We should get him on the show sometime.
He would just spend 30 minutes mocking me.
but he'd do it in a gentle, I'm sure.
No, it wouldn't be gentle. It'd be brutal. Yeah.
Is he really?
It's okay. I'm sure I deserve it.
Yeah, but he's brilliant, brilliant guy. But I really would like to know how he's been incorporated into Microsoft, because he seemed like such a non-Microsoft kind of guy. I'm wondering how Microsoft's using him.
The thing I'm interested. So this is the guy who wrote all those Windows Internals books, and the thing that always really freaked me out about him was that this guy basically figured out how the Windows kernel worked from the outside.
Reverse engineered it, yeah.
Yeah, and never, ever looked at the source code. Now, of course, he's in Microsoft, so now he has an even better view, but it's no wonder that they got him and made him a Microsoft fellow. Just the smartest guy, and knows more about the internals of Windows than any human being on Earth. There's no doubt about it.
He also is the guy who wrote the first anti-rootkit software.
Yeah,
which was very useful at the time, because Sony had just put a rootkit on all our systems.
Well, yeah, he was the guy who sort of highlighted that was happening. Right. He brought that, you know, he made that into a news story.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. All right. Hey, we've wrapped it up. A great episode with lots of good stuff. I know you want to get back to work playing Call of Duty 4.
That's right.
I've got some Saracens to go after, but we'll come back next week, and we're going to talk to the guys from Windows Live guys, and I can't wait. Who exactly are we talking to?
I believe we're going to be talking to Dave 14. I'm not sure if there's going to be anyone else on board.
I got an email that it sounded like there were two guys, so I don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah, that could be. Yeah. I think they were trying to figure out. I know Dave's coming, and it could be others. Yeah.
Good. That'll be a lot of fun.
That'll be good.
We'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us. Thank you, Paul. Don't forget Windows IT Pro. That's where Paul's the news editor, and Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. And we'll see you next week on Windows Weekly.